Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
If we're going to play a lot of October baseball, like some of these guys are going to have to do special things. Like which ones doesn't really matter. Like, but some of these guys are going to have to do some special things. We got a lot of candidates, and I think that's why we're capable of playing a lot of games in October. But we're going to need some special offensive performances for sure.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score.
Speaking of special performances, playoff baseball. Get a load of this. Tune in today from 2 to 5 as Matt Spiegel hosts a special edition of Hit and Run right here on The Score. He'll break down the Cubs' playoff berth and look ahead to baseball's postseason. That's today from 2 to 5 p.m. on The Score and the Odyssey app, brought to you by Budweiser. This Bud's for you. Yep, the Cubs are back in the playoffs. They happily did it with a win. It wasn't, not that they would have backed in. I mean, they won a lot of games, but they could have qualified while they were sleeping because somebody loses all the way. But they won the game. And Ian Happ, the longest standing Cub, right? Isn't he the longest standing Cub?
I think he's the longest tenured Chicago player.
And he caught the ball that ended the game in Pittsburgh, and they made the playoffs. And if I have it right, Ian Happ is the longest standing Cub, and he's never won a playoff game.
That is also correct.
That is such a Cub thing. It's one thing to say, well, you've never been to the playoffs. As a Cub, you can believe that, the way they've gone sometimes. But been to the playoffs and never won a game.
Yeah, Happ called up on that 2018 team that lost to the Rockies in that wild card round.
And before that, lost to Milwaukee after Craig Counsell's Brewers ran him down in Craig Timber. And then they lost the Rockies. And then they did the David Ross thing. And they lost those two games. And they lost two games in a row to the Marlins. And it's like, oh, Ian Happ could really use a victory. Megan Montemurro, has Ian Happ talked about actually being on the winning side of a playoff game for the first time in his life as a Cub?
I mean, he certainly, you know, in Pittsburgh talked about just, you know, how good it felt to be back, obviously, in the postseason. And he told me how emotional he got as he caught that final out. I know he maybe has flown under the radar in terms of just like his longevity with the organization, especially on the big league team. But, talking to players in that post-clinching celebrating clubhouse, a lot of them mentioned how happy they were for Happ and Nico Horner too. I mean, he was, you know, he hasn't played in a playoff game before. And so, you know, a lot of guys mentioned those two in particular of, you know, just how long they've been with the organization and been on the big league team and getting back to the postseason and what it means for those two guys in particular. And so, there was obviously a lot of excitement. And I think obviously it takes off, you know, some pressure over the last week and a half for the team to just kind of get in order as much as they can before the wild card series.
My guest is Megan Montemurro of the Tribune. She covers the Cubs. She joins me on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. So the celebration for a team was seemed to be running away with the division and then Milwaukee went bonkers and the Cubs went dormant, and yet the Cubs still played at a 90-win level the way Craig Counsell said they had to. And some, you know, some celebrations are different than others. I remember Joe Torre being asked if they were going to beat the – if they beat – team secretary, traveling secretary said, are we going to have champagne if we beat the A's? Like, as if to say, shouldn't we do this? This is going for a three-peat. And he said, with what this team's been through, we're going to pour every chance we get. That seemed to be the Cubs – the vibe I got from the outside. What was it like covering that celebration?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was just excitement. I mean, it's such an interesting group because, I mean, you have quite a few guys who not only obviously made their major league debuts this year, but younger players who've never experienced the postseason. You have some more veteran guys like Dansby Swanson, Justin Turner, Jameson Taillon, Matthew Boyd, who've either, you know, pitched or played in the postseason before or even won a World Series. So I think there's a lot of different things to celebrate for a team like this. You're celebrating, you know, a goal that was set out, you know, way back at the beginning of the season, you know, kicking it off in Japan to where they are now. And all of them, you know, leading up to the clinching, acknowledge like making the playoffs isn't the main goal, but you have to check that box to accomplish the other goals you want to reach in October. And so I think just what stood out was just, you know, the obvious enjoyment, relief, celebration. And I think it was really good messaging from Counsell too in the lead up in that day too of like, you celebrate, the game is so hard, the season's so long, you celebrate the moments like this and the journey the team has collectively been on. Every year is unique. And I think they really took that to heart. And then the messaging after that was, you know, we still have more immediate goals of, you know, locking down the top wild card spot to host the wild card series at Wrigley. And so I think it was a really good balance of, you know, keeping in mind the big picture goals, but also celebrating, you know, those wins or those celebratory moments when they happen.
My guest is Megan Montemurro of the Tribune. We're talking Cubs baseball here on The Score. Cubs baseball is heard on The Score. They'll be playing in Cincinnati tonight. Last night, though, you worried about Shota, three dingers he gave up?
I think it's concerning in the sense of the rate at which he's allowed homers this year. Obviously, when the team signed him from Japan, his pitch mix profile, his style of pitching, there was an expectation he would be susceptible to giving up home runs. I will say, you know, one still encouraging element is even with the home runs, they largely have been with nobody on base. Of the 29 home runs he's allowed this year, only five have had a runner on base when it's happened. So in that sense, I mean, a quality start is three runs allowed in six innings. How those three runs score, you know, if it's three solo homers, you're still finding ways to limit damage. But I do think, you know, as you go into October, you know, even those one run home runs matter. And so, you know, just talking to Carson Kelly after the game last night too, who was behind the plate, catching him last night, you know, he talked about finding creative ways, you know, maybe it's delving into thinking outside the box of, okay, like, how are we attacking hitters? And some of it too, just might be, you know, Shota needing to better command his fastball at the top of the zone. And so maybe that's something that he works on his next bullpen where, you know, you're really targeting that area. And so it'll be interesting to see, you know, how Shota looks in his last start that he'll have next week before the playoffs. So I think it's fair to have some concern and yet also understand like this is part of his profile. I mean, he gave up a good number of home runs last year that were, again, mostly solo homers. And so it'll be interesting to see what that might look like, you know, in October where, you know, in theory, the conditions might not be great for giving up home runs. So it'll be interesting to see if he used a different pitch mix in his last outing or what kind of adjustments he tries to make.
So, Megan, it appears it'll be San Diego. It appears it'll be at Wrigley if the standings hold as they are now. And the Padres, hit right-handers better than and slug against right-handers, better OPS, 50 points higher against right-handers than left-handers. What's your playoff rotation and why?
I mean, you know, I think there is this debate of, you know, do you ride the so-called hot hand? Do you go with the guy who's pitching the best versus experience? And I think, you know, if I'm looking at it, I think you go with Cade Horton in game one. You know, I get the numbers with San Diego and how they do against righties versus lefties. But, I mean, Horton has been their most consistent starter over the last, you know, 2 to 3 months. And obviously he's been pitching on, you know, a limit of around 75 pitches per start. But, I mean, he's just looked so good. And, you know, once you get past that first game, if you lose it, you're all hands on deck anyway for game two. And so, you know, I think, you know, he's been pitching well enough to earn it. You know, you talk to people around the team, you know, his competitiveness is just like at an incredible level, especially for a guy that young who really has not thrown that many innings since he graduated high school. And so, with just how well he's looked, I think you have to really consider going with him in game one. And then, you know, game two, you have Imanaga, you have Matthew Boyd. And so you have choices there, but it will be interesting. I mean, you know, Council was asked about that the first day here in Cincinnati, and he basically was like, you know, that game's 2 weeks away. There's no reason to declare a starter right now. Although, you know, they are at the point where they're having to start plotting that out because they're not going to have the luxury to really fully line everything up as they might want. Since, you know, if you're a wild card team, you're playing that Sunday. And then for them, they're playing Tuesday. So they definitely have laid it out in a way that as of right now, with how the rotation's set up, that Cade could start game one.
Would the indication of Cade starting game one be how they set their rotation this week?
Well, so they're going six man. They already have a six man setup, so that gives them some flexibility to, you know, align the pitchers as they want. So right now, I mean, they haven't announced the starters for the Mets series, but it would seem Cade is lined up for Tuesday. So, you know, because of that, that would be his last. You'd make that his last start of the season. And then he would be ready to go for game one. So they definitely have that ability to do that. You could also, if you wanted Shota, you can manipulate potentially when he goes in the last week. But right now, I mean, if you count out the days and if you're going a six-man rotation, I mean, there's only six games left. So if he's starting the first series of the last six-game homestand, then the math would suggest that lines him up for game one. Now, again, you know, nothing's set in stone. Council would definitely not go anywhere near declaring Horton as the game one starter. But, I mean, they certainly have him set up that if they want to use him in game one, he could go on normal rest. Or I think he actually would have maybe an extra day or two before that. So it's definitely feasible with how it's currently lined out.
My guest is Megan Montemurro of the Tribune. She covers the Cubs. She's talking Cubs baseball here, Cubs playoff baseball. I am here for every inning of Yu Darvish and Dylan Cease pitching against the Cubs and Wrigley in this playoff series. I'm here for the fun. Wouldn't that be fun, Megan? Wouldn't that be a wonderful, yet another storyline layered onto this?
Yeah, I mean, I think storylines are kind of what makes especially postseason baseball fun. I mean, it's such a grind of a season, you know, compared, I think, to other professional sports leagues. And so, yeah, I think that's one of the fun parts of baseball is, you know, comes down to, you know, hypothetically, if you have, you know, Yu Darvish, just, you know, in an elimination game going up against the Cubs. I mean, yeah, I think those are the things that make it fun, and getting to see who in the postseason steps up in the big moments and really kind of can define the season. I think those are the things that you look forward to when you get to the playoffs.
The way the Cubs season has gone, Kyle Tucker started off being Kyle Tucker. Now he's just a rumor. There's lots of questions about him. But what he did was he gave the lineup an anchor in a lot of ways. And when the Cubs were winning games and never out of a game, we went through early stretch of that. That was the bottom of the order. That was PCA and Carson Kelly and Bush. And it was suddenly the bottom of the order then became the middle of the order, the top of the order. And where is the length of the Cubs lineup, the kind of length you need to win playoff series and another playoff series and another playoff series? Where's that length now?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when you don't have Tucker in the lineup or you don't have the version where he's a slug threat like he wasn't, you know, for that six or whatever week stretch before, you know, Council gave him those couple days off. I think that's part of it. You don't have him at the top. Suzuki hasn't been hitting the same that he was in the first half. I think he's at like maybe 5-ish extra base hits, you know, since the All-Star break. So, I mean, it goes beyond Tucker, but obviously not having him be who he was is detrimental. But, you know, you're also seeing things like, you know, Matt Shaw was on a heater for a while. He's cooled off a smidge, but obviously had that home run last night. Pete Armstrong, you know, the consistency hasn't been there. But you see the ebbs and flows. On like the flip side, you know, Ian Happ has been really locked in over the last month. Nico Horner has been doing what he's been doing pretty consistently. You know, Dansby continues to show some power. So, like, you know, there's some give and take in terms of just the length of the lineup and where they're getting contributions. I think Michael Bush has flown under the radar a bit. He's been looking better too. And so really it's going to be, you know, can they get rolling a little bit and get some momentum over these last 10 days? Because you're kind of getting to the point where, you know, tinkering with things is that you don't have the time really to tinker and try new things at this point. And so it's just kind of going to be, you know, putting together good at bats over the last, you know, week and a half and seeing what happens in October. I mean, that's kind of at the point of the season you're at. And for the Cubs, you hope you get Tucker back and, you know, he brings that, that approach to the top of the lineup again.
My guest is Megan Montemurro of the Tribune. We're talking Cubs baseball here. The playoffs being a different animal and potentially short lifespan. So, Craig Council uses analytics in putting together a lot of lineups, odds, the probabilities. It almost feels like a long game at times, but there's not a long game to be played in the playoffs. What is he likely to do? I don't know what he did in Milwaukee. What is he likely to do balancing analytics and just which players are hot in putting together lineups in the first series?
Yeah, I mean, obviously some of it you're looking at platoon advantages, you know, depending on who's part of the postseason roster. But I mean, I wouldn't expect him to greatly deviate from, you know, the approach, you know, they've had all season where, you know, you put Justin Turner at DH against a lefty, you know, depending on who might be starting, maybe they consider, you know, again, I don't know what the roster would look like, but, you know, he hasn't been afraid to use Reese McGuire against tough right-handers. So I think it will be interesting to see how much, you know, because as you said, like, you know, the season can end quickly in the postseason, especially a 3-game wild card series of, you know, how much does he rely on track record versus recent performance. You know, I think it's going to be most interesting to see how he deploys the bullpen, especially in the wild card series where, you know, you don't need to have 5 starting pitchers necessarily with just the 3-game series. So, you know, who does he use as long options? What starters does he put in the bullpen? How quickly does he go to the bullpen if a starter doesn't seem to have it? And so, yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how he operates. And he was talking about the other day, just like in the playoffs in his seat, like you need to be thinking ahead a lot farther than you would in a regular season game. And so it'll be interesting to see what that looks like.
You mentioned the bullpen. Before I let you go, Megan, you mentioned the bullpen and you build it from the back out. Are they building it with Daniel Palencia in mind? Are they going to be able to see him before it gets in? You do not want to see Daniel Palencia the first time you see him after all this is in the ninth inning against San Diego, and here comes Machado and Tatis and like that. Or maybe you do. I don't know. But I would think they'd want to get an idea of what they're dealing with. What are they dealing with back there with Daniel Palencia, and how does that, how do the dominoes fall in front of him?
Yeah, I mean, the expectation is that he's going to pitch at AAA Iowa this weekend before their season ends Sunday. So that should give a good indication whether or not he'll be ready for the postseason. I would imagine if he is feeling good after that outing, he would rejoin the team on the homestand and you get him into a game or two to see how he looks against big league hitters. So, I don't know if they would necessarily go to him right again in the closer spot because, you know, there had been some signs of some struggles prior to the injury. And you know, Brad Keller and, you know, Andrew Kittredge. I mean, they have a lot of guys that they feel comfortable using in those spots. But I think getting Palencia back just gives you more high leverage options, which if you're Council and the Cubs, like, that's what you want in the postseason because those moments might come sooner than the ninth inning. You might need one of your better relievers, you know, in a big spot in the sixth inning that could define the game. So the more high leverage arms that you're confident in and that you have in the pen, obviously that benefits the bullpen as a whole and what they can do to deploy them.
One last question, Megan. Do the Padres have anyone who can compete with Dansby Swanson's hair?
I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen headshots of all the Padres players, but his flow's up there. I mean, I would argue maybe Shota's flow that he's been rocking lately is also pretty solid, but yeah, that's some pretty solid natural hair.
Okay, just want to know. It's important. It's not how you play. It's how you look, and you look marvelous, Dansby. I just wanted to make sure. Megan, thanks for your time. Appreciate you joining me today.
Yeah, no problem. Have a good day.
All right, you too. Megan Montemurro of the Tribune. She covers the Cubs and Reds tonight. You'll hear it on the Score. And you know what you'll hear at top of the hour? You will hear Matt Spiegel doing a special edition of Hit and Run. Yeah, right here on the Score. He'll be talking more Cubs playoff berth stuff and baseball's postseason. He'll be on from 2 to 5. It's like an emergency hit and run. It is a special edition. This tells you how much Spiegs likes baseball. It's a Saturday afternoon, and he's doing a radio show. It's one that normally airs on Sundays, but now we have baseball pregame, football pre-show, and Spiegs loves baseball. And there's lots to talk about, especially with the Cubs headed in the playoffs. And that is brought to you by Budweiser. This Bud's for you. Do we have that wrong? A texter said that Ian Happ was on the 2017 team that beat the Nationals.
He was, yeah. I did go and check this. He did make, Happ did get his call up in 2017. So he was on that team that beat the Nats.
Was he on the roster?
He was on the roster.
He was on the playoff roster.
He was on the playoff roster, yes.
So he knows what it's like to be victorious.
I guess. I think he got maybe like 6 plate appearances that whole series. So,
well, that's 6 more than I expected him to get.
That's true. Yeah, we gave him none. So,
all right. So he's been there. There's your veteran. Okay. And Justin Turner will be there. This is the guy, the former Dodger. He's won rings. And the guy who's a stand-in for ZZ Top. He brings that to the batter's box. Take a break when we come back. All right, you know, I'm sorry. We talked about the Cubs. They're good. They're interesting. We're going to talk about the Bears defense. They're just sucking in so many ways. And they're playing a team that sucks just as much as them. Wow. This is exciting.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Exciting. Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage. So, of course, we're talking Bears defense. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I think we all embrace the challenge. You know, there's no question about it. When you have significant players that are missing time, it's challenging. And yet, that's why we do what we do, and that's why we're at the highest level of this profession, you know, is to figure out solutions and figure out ways to get the job done, you know. And really 90% of the world doesn't care about your problems. The other 10% are glad you got them, you know. So, you know, we just come in every night. We go to work, try to put a good plan together, try to, you know, utilize our guys the best we can, put them in good positions to make plays. And, you know, I think you know, hopefully we'll go out and do that this weekend.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score.
That's Dennis Allen, the coach of, well, one of the two coaches whose defense has given up 500-plus yards in a game. The coach, the defensive coordinator of the other defense, he'll be on the other side on Sunday. There you go. Bears, Cowboys. The only two teams have a defense give up 500-plus yards in a game, and here they are, neither with Micah Parsons, both desperately needing Micah Parsons. And Dennis Allen's talking about putting guys in position to win. Well, it can't be more embarrassing for the likes of Hallis Hall than to have to come out and express that we'd like Montez Sweat and his $98 million to win some of those one-on-one battles. When he's single-blocked, he should win those. No kidding! For $100 million? Wreck a game, pal! And the Bears say that, and there seems to be a complete lack of embarrassment at Hallis Hall from Sweat, Dennis Allen, Ben Johnson, Ryan Poles. Sweat's supposed to be a multiplier. It's just multiplying losses is all they're doing now. But he's not the only one. I mean, there are certain ways to look at, you know, the Bears' defense is bad. This was a really eye-opening way to view that. Dennis Allen's defense allowed 27 points to the Vikings, who scored only 6 against the Falcons last Sunday. Dennis Allen's defense allowed 52 points to the Lions, who scored only 13 in their opener against the Packers. So, for those of you keeping score at home, the Bears have allowed 79 points to two teams that had scored 19 in their other games. Can you say sucks, boys and girls? Good, I knew you could. Jared Goff completed 23 of 28 passes for 334 yards, 5 TDs, and a 156.0 passer rating. The Bears did not record a sack in the game, Montez Sweat. That's the Tez effect. He doesn't get a sack. Nobody gets a sack. Quarterback just destroys them. NFL Next Gen Stats. Oh, my God. Goff connected on 8 of his 11 pass attempts that traveled at least 10 yards. He had the time to throw a pass at least 10 yards. It went 10 yards. He completed 8 of 11. Pass rush, hello, you home? The lights are on, but nobody's home. Montez, where are you? Dio, what are you doing with all that money? Too slow to run with all those millions in your butt?
So that's Montez.
8 completions of Goff, 10 yards or more, went for 241 yards and 2 TDs. He was also 12 for 14 on play action passes because they have a running game. Ben Johnson doesn't have a running game. Ben Johnson has DeAndre Swift. DeAndre Swift, who is Detroit, got rid of him and then got a running game. Philadelphia got rid of him and then got a running game and got a Super Bowl title. And the Bears are holding the hot potato, a running back who's not really a running back. Jared Goff did not need Ben Johnson calling his offensive plays, did he? No. He just needed to face Ben Johnson's defense. There you go. Here we go, guys. Thank God there's this. The Cowboys allowed 37 points and 450 passing yards to the Giants. They are 31st, the Cowboys are, in allowing opposing quarterbacks to complete 76.6% of their pass attempts. The Bears are not last. You need to know that. The Bears are not worse than the Cowboys in opposing quarterbacks completion percentage. The Bears are 29th, zooming up from 31st. Opposing passer rating against the Bears, they are last. 136.9. That's a joke. 136.9. Dallas is 30th at 114.2. Cowboys have allowed a league-high 4 pass plays of 40-plus yards. If not now, Caleb, when? Right? Isn't that... Doesn't this... Russell Wilson, he's 36. Went off for 450 passing yards, 3 TDs. The Giants piled up 506 yards against Matt Eberflus's defense. They had 200, not just 100-yard receivers, 240-yard receivers. If not now, Luther Burden, when? Caleb's offense needs Matt Eberflus's defense the way Jared Goff needed the Bears' defense. If not now, then hello, Arch Manning. If he's already being talked about, like, oh, this guy could be a bust. Doesn't he sound like the next Bears' number one overall draft pick? Isn't that where this is headed? And Ryan Poles will fail to interview several quarterbacks who might have been considered for that, right? The guy who didn't want to interview Jaden Daniels because he was going to pick the guy he knew would be a success. And this guy is a lot closer to bust than best. We take a break. When we come back, you know what? This is a special treat. I told you earlier, Matt Spiegel would be doing a special hit and run from 2 to 5, which is great. Matt Spiegel is going to be on Score, 2 to 5, on the Score of the Odyssey app. And we're going to do transition. I had a question from a texter. Said, you're the perfect person to ask this question, 815 texter. And I would think maybe I'm the perfect person. I'm one of them because Matt Spiegel's the other. And I don't want to spring this on Speaks. I'm sure he's not listening, but I'm sure Tyler is back there in the production. He said, okay.
We'll pass it along to Speaks.
Rosenblum's going to ask you this. The texter asked, who do you think is greater as a Dodger, Fernando Valenzuela or Clayton Kershaw?
It's a good question.
A really good argument, a good discussion. And Speaks, that's the kind of thing Speaks would love. And I know that he and I both shared a fondness for the mound farewells. Clayton Kershaw got one at home, Dodger Stadium. And by the way, Dodger Stadium became called Dodger Stadium because of Fernando. Fernando Mania in 1981, like Dodger Stadium. So much so that now on one of the concession stand boards, you can get a Dodger dog. Cheese, queso, and jalapenos.
It looks awesome.
And when that place, it's not particularly cozy, Dodger Stadium. It's a beautiful place. But it's not particularly cozy, but there can be noise there. And you bet Clayton Kershaw. By the way, this is a really, I love smart social media accounts by teams. So yesterday, it's a story that's been well told. But in Clayton Kershaw's last home game on the broadcast, they're interviewing Matthew Stafford. Okay? We all know, I mean, Sean Sears is nodding his head and Tyler's nodding his head. So there is Matthew Stafford, who would, he would be the catcher for Clayton Kershaw, and Clayton Kershaw would be the center for Matthew Stafford when they were in college. That's how it worked. They're buds. I think it was college. Was it high school?
I think it might have been high school.
Okay. So they were in the fall. Clayton Kershaw was snapping the ball to Matthew Stafford. And in the spring, Clayton Kershaw was snapping off that curveball to his catcher, Matthew Stafford. And so a long-known friendship had been long-known in both sports. And MLB sent out a tweet with the interview and the video of Matthew Stafford talking about how long he's known Clayton Kershaw and the Rams team for which Matthew Stafford quarterbacks, retweeted it with the comment, "Wait, you mean these two guys know each other?" Just wonderful.
That's what social media is for.
Yeah. And if, the social media, the awareness and the response by teams last week, it's Tampa Bay and Houston, right? And Baker Mayfield's leading this comeback, right? And with a with a spectacular scramble. So the NFL sends out this video of Baker's scramble and the somersault and a terrific play, keep the drive alive. And the question, Baker Mayfield scrambles for a first down. Can the Bucs complete the comeback? That's all it said, right? Gets you to tune in. Tells you where to tune in. And so after the game was over, the Bucs retweeted it and just said, yep. I just love that. I love smart social media. All right, take a break, and we will ask the final exam question of Matthew Spiegel. Who's the greater Dodger? Fernando Valenzuela or Clayton Kershaw? And mound exits. Spiegel loves them. I know that. I love them. And we'll talk about that leading up to hit and run. 2 o'clock, 2 to 5 today on The Score. Spiegs with a special Saturday edition. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why fans. It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, what a curveball. Holy mackerel. He just broke off public enemy number one. Look at this thing. It's up there. It's right there. And Casey is history. And at the end of 3.5, 3-0 Dodgers.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score.
That was brilliant, Sean Sears. You found that was Vin Scully calling one of the first 12-6 curveballs he saw from Clayton Kershaw. Public enemy number one indeed for 17 years, going right through last night's start. Vin's laugh, like he couldn't believe it. Oh my God, that was just great. Welcome in, welcome back. Steve Rosenblum here on Saturday Suckage, where we've been the 3-hour pregame show for Hit and Run, special edition Hit and Run, hosted by Matt Spiegel, who's there. Hey, Matt Spiegel, how are you?
Stevie, Sunshine. Nice to talk to you, buddy. Yeah, I mean, I love that moment so much because Vin Scully laughing uncontrollably.
Yes.
At just how majestic that curveball was. And I got to tell you, some of the curveballs last night, still pretty damn majestic. Like, he's lost velocity, and he's had to change the way that he pitches, but that curve is still just absolutely gorgeous.
And I want to get to the exit in just a moment, because I know you love them the way I do. And I want to first get to a question posed by a texter, the greater Dodger. Fernando or Kershaw?
In terms of?
Well, the greater success.
The greater Dodger.
Who do you think is the greater Dodger?
Oh, God. You know what makes that interesting is the imprint and importance goes to Fernando.
Unquestionably.
Like, because of what he represented to the residents of Chavez Ravine and to Mexicans everywhere, and how that team and their fandom is still so steeped in that, as well as the sensation that he was in 81 and through those first six seasons were all all-star seasons. And we still look at hot starts and say, kind of reminds me of Fernando.
Yes.
You know, I said that to Rick Sutcliffe on the air about Shota Imanaga's first 10, 12 starts as a Cub that were so brilliant. I said, kind of feels like Fernando mania. And he's like, you know what? I got to give it to you. You're absolutely right. So it's like we still talk about it 40 years later. That's quite something. And he was better in the postseason, and he was part of them winning a World Series in 81. I mean, Kershaw... The career is amazing, and he's wonderful for all the things that he is. But in terms of imprint and archetype and memorability, if that's a word, it's Fernando.
Yeah, Kershaw had the longer career and had better numbers and more hardware. Three times Cy Young. I don't think Fernando did that. And they both had championship rings. However, they got them. And I think it's interesting what separated Fernando. Clearly, he won the idea of what he meant to a community and to baseball then. But what Kershaw has meant as a monument to greatness for 17 years in a game where guys can't get to five innings, or we want to induct them into Cooperstown if they do.
Well, speaking of Cooperstown, I heard this last night from our old friend Wayne Randazzo on Apple TV, and I raced to the phone to write it down. And I've already used it on some of my favorite baseball trivia buddies. If Kershaw is a first ballot Hall of Famer, which I think he will become the sixth single team starting pitcher to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Only five in the history of the game pitched for just one team as starting pitchers and made the Hall of Fame on the first ballot. And that is a tiny little list. And if you want to talk about other stuff, I don't have to pay it off. I can pay it off on the other side and make people wait for the beginning of it and run.
My first two guests are Bob Gibson and Walter Johnson.
Yes and yes. So Gibson and Johnson, and yes, and there are three others.
Bob Feller?
That is three, Steve Rosenblum. Well done.
Whitey Ford?
No, Whitey Ford didn't get in on the first ballot. Voters were jerks, man. I mean, sometimes they still are. Ichiro wasn't unanimous, you know. So, like, voters can be jerks. First ballot, five single-team starting pitchers who were first ballot Hall of Famers. You're excellent. You've given me Gibson, Walter Johnson, and Bob Feller. There's two more, a Dodger.
Well, that would be Koufax.
Koufax makes four, and the fifth...
See, Drysdale was too.
But he wasn't first ballot.
No, he wasn't first ballot. So a first ballot starting pitcher for one team.
There's only one more left. He is currently a broadcaster in Major League Baseball on the local level for the team that he starred for and played for.
Jim Palmer.
That is correct. So the answer is Palmer, Feller, Gibson, Walter Johnson, and Koufax. And Kershaw's probably going to join that list. How about that list?
Sorry, we don't have a six-man rotation in the playoff, Clayton. You're coming out of the bullpen to close.
Yeah, okay. Right? I don't think he can close, but you remember when he I want to say he threw was it four great innings in the postseason
yes.
to beat the Nationals out of the bullpen? It wasn't a start. It was out of the bullpen. You remember what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. And it was every bit. Go back to Walter Johnson. What he did that to redeem himself in the 1924 World Series. And then Schilling and Big Unit, coming out and go, okay, it's over. This is like, forget it. Here comes Big Unit. Well, that was the Dodgers' Big Unit with Kershaw coming out.
Yeah, so I think it was the Nationals, but either way, I don't remember Walter Johnson's 1924 World Series performance.
Oh, yeah, I was there. Now I'm doing Les Gorovsky. So let me ask you about mound exits, because I love them.
Yeah.
And yesterday's, you've been at Dodger Stadium, I've been at Dodger Stadium. It was wonderful. That place is really open air, but it can get really loud. And the whole idea of that, I loved seeing that. And there's his wife. His wife's coming out. And it was just a wonderful moment. I love those. I'm such a sucker for those things.
Well, I mean, you're right about the mound, because there it is in the center of everything. And all of the energy and focus can go right there, including his teammates in the infield slowly making their way towards him as Roberts makes his way towards them. And then he gets the walk off. There's something so, you know, symmetrical about it and cylindrical about it in a round stadium where all the energy can come at you. But baseball just does these moments best. It always has. There's a historical context that underpins the entire game every time you're watching anyway. So when you get a moment, you get a game like that, the historical context is already, you know, built in. And then the pacing of it allows for, mm-hmm. I mean, all an umpire has to do is step away and hold his hands up, and he can take as long as you want. You know, a catcher has to pretend he's got something caught in his eye, and a batter can get it can get as much, you know, as much of an ovation as he needs. Like the pacing is just built for it. And the relatability, the companion nature of it means we see these people all the time. There's no face mask. There's no helmet. We feel like we know their body language. So if they show any sadness or wistfulness, we feel like we can feel it right there with them. It's just perfect for
us. And Joe Maddon showed us you can use the pitcher's mound to change catchers, as he did with David Ross, and got David Ross the deserved applause, standing ovation, and just a wonderful feeling as Grandpa was leaving.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's great. That's
I've
great
run
stuff.
Into your time, and I appreciate that. I'm lovely. It's great to talk to you, and I wish you a wonderful show. I'm sure it will be, because you'll have the Cubs playoff roster. It'll be incontrovertible by the time you get done writing it down. Everybody should write this down, Matt Spiegel. Hit and Run, special edition, coming up at 2 o'clock. I need to get out of here. Saturday Suckage, thanks for listening. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly what people outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.